people are willing to live in a proper way as long as it's, as long as they find their purpose first, when it's usually opposite. Yeah. Right. Everybody wants money, but they don't want to do the work. Everyone wants the body, but they don't want to go to the gym. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, we got to go to the gym to have the body, or we got to go to work to have the money. Right. We have to be in the process of finding or extracting the best version of ourselves in order to find out what our purpose is.
Yeah. Real business, real business, real business.
Whatever your situation is currently is not your forever situation.
That's really what real business owners is, man. Like, we don't care where you come from. Yeah. Where are you going?
Our goal and our job is to reduce the mistakes that you have to make or the money that you have to lose.
You want to be an entrepreneur, you want to be successful, don't give up.
You learn, adjust, and continue to move forward.
Welcome back to another episode of Real Business Owners Podcast with myself, Trevor Cowley. Today we have Tyler Hall as a guest. Welcome.
Thanks, man. Appreciate having me.
Yeah. Excited to have you. I mean, anytime that you get a referral from an individual like Justin, you know it's going to be an individual of character and integrity. So, you know, when I got the message, he's sent a few people our way, and they've always been great podcasts. So I'm excited to chat with you today and get to know your story. So I don't know Tyler too well. So everybody that's listening is going to get to know him on the fly, just as I am. So if you will, tell us just a little bit about yourself, kind of the come up story, your claim to fame, so to speak, because I know that you've seen some success and now you're more in an industry where you're serving other people, trying to help other people become the best version of themselves and dig a little bit deeper into their soul and kind of figure out, you know, maybe their own life's purpose with levels, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. So
I'll introduce myself a little bit differently. Okay. Yeah. So, I think it's normal in today's world to introduce ourselves based on what
successes,
we've done, right?
Yeah.
But I think what happens when you introduce yourself as what you've done, or even what you do today, is you tend to really miss understanding the person's identity. Okay. So for introducing myself to you and to the audience, I'm going to actually read what I call my I am statement.
Cool.
Is that okay?
Yeah, please.
I'm a child of God with potential beyond human imagination. I'm a father of four sacred children and a husband to a loving wife. I am a machine. My habits and routines can't be broken. I'm a man of my word. I do what I say I'm going to do. I'm a doer. Watch my feet, not my lips. A long game player, not distracted by instant gratification. I'm an acceptor of people. My ability to judge does not exist. I lift others and always bring good energy. I don't take things personally because I know who I am. Full of love for my fellow men, even tempered, because I stay present. A calm and kind man, but not to be taken lightly. My sword is sheathed and will only be used if absolutely necessary. Called to change the lives of millions of men through my example.
That's cool.
So that's who I am.
I love that. So you don't get to that point without going through something.
Yeah.
Right? Like, look, I know struggle very well, right? I have a past, and you usually have to go through some darkness to be able to go that deep with yourself to say, okay, this isn't who I am. This is who I am. So like what was the path that got you to the point where you said, this is who I am. Mm-hmm. This is my identity, right? Because that just doesn't, you don't wake up one day and everything's perfect and say, you know what? I'm going to change. Mm-hmm. Change usually requires some sort of friction, some sort of pain, right? So what brought that about?
I mean, I think there's a lot, right? But there's one, I think, main catalyst that brought this about. So I was the founder of a company called Drivably, which was an automotive software business. I founded this company in 2018, quickly became this, you know, sort of high-flying tech entrepreneur. I'd raised a bunch of venture capital. We were first company in North America ever backed by Porsche. We had all these great accolades. Company was doing really well. Went through a extreme roller coaster, right? Being a first-time founder doing this. Ultimately, COVID comes along. We make a strategic acquisition that would have either killed the company or would have done really well, depending on sort of the outcome of COVID.
So you were swinging for the fences on that.
Yeah, we were at a place where, like, the business was okay, but we were running out of money. We were a venture-backed company, so it was like sort of the model was grow at all cost. Grow, burn, raise more money, burn, right?
Yeah.
And we made a big gamble in the middle of COVID, which the whole board, we sat down and said, this is either going to make or break us. Yeah. And the way that COVID went was, you know, it ultimately made us, right? You had an all-time high demand for vehicles from consumers. Mm. You had an all-time low supply of inventory.
Yeah.
And we were positioned right in the middle of that perfect storm. So the next 18 months was gangbusters. We had this sort of vertical growth in the company. We were acquired in October of 2021 by a public company. So here I am at this point. I'm 30 years old. I've got three kids, happily married, 10 years, rich. My life is perfect
yeah.
at this stage.
Yeah.
And 4 months after that, I'm in Houston, Texas, and for a work trip, and I traveled a lot for work. I didn't see my kids, my wife a lot. And I get on the elevator. The elevator doors are closing. As they're closing, a man sticks his arm in the door, and he hops on with me. And just out of courtesy, I said, "Hey, man, how you doing?" And he looked me dead in the eyes, and he said, "I'm not doing well. I had to bury my 26-year-old son today." And, you know, you say, "How are you?" to 100 people, and yeah. 99 times you get the same answer, yeah. which is, "I'm good, I'm fine, yeah. I'm great, how are you?" Right? This time was different. So I was kind of in shock. I didn't know what to say. And the guy said, you know, he was a good kid. He didn't have drug problems or any total fluke accident. And I had to bury him today. And so he said, "I don't know who you are. I don't know your story." He said, "I don't know if you have a family or kids." He said, "But if you do, hold them really, really close, because you never know when it's going to be their last day." Literally, the doors open, 10th floor. I open up my arms to hug this guy. I give him a hug. He turns around. He walks out of the elevator. Doors closed, man. It just hit me like a ton of bricks. Just like, dang, dude. Like, that really spoke to me. Exactly 1 month later, I'm in New York City. This is like every entrepreneur's dream is, yeah, sell the company, make a lot of money. But it's like, be at NASDAQ, Wall Street, on CNBC, doing the thing, right? Like
getting recognized.
Yeah, in front of the world.
Yeah, exactly. Right? For all the successes.
This was that moment. I was there with the CEO of the parent company. We were getting ready to do our thing. We did a dry run on Monday. It was the last day in February. I wake up March 1st of 2022 to a phone call from my mother-in-law. And it was 8 a.m. New York time. It was 5 in the morning Arizona time. Now, my mother-in-law and I are close, but we don't talk on the phone ever, right? So it was super concerning. So instead of answering the phone and saying hello, I said, "What happened?" And she said, "Brooklyn, who is my wife, is being rushed to the hospital in an ambulance. We don't know what's going on, but you should get home." So I have all sorts of thoughts at this moment going through my mind. What do I do? Do I stay here? Do I board a plane?
Yeah.
What's going to happen to my wife? I decide to go home. Car picks me up. I'm getting text message updates on the way to the airport from my father-in-law that read, "Just got to the airport. Just checked her in for an ultrasound. They found 2 liters of blood in her abdomen." At this point, I'm at the airport. The next update is a picture of the whiteboard in the doctor's office that reads ruptured ectopic pregnancy. It was the diagnosis that was written on the whiteboard. I go to Google, I research this. I find out that in more than 50% of cases, when this happens in the home, it's lethal. Okay. So I go from like, when bad things happen, life just figures out how to make them okay. Like, I have a lot of hope. This is going to be fine. To a feeling of desperation. Like, my wife's going to die. Right. So I go into this insane. I don't know if you've ever been in shock before, like real shock. It's a weird thing. It's a scary thing. My vision sort of, you become tunnel vision. It's hard to think. You become kind of short of breath, a lot of like physical symptoms. So I start going into shock in the airport. The next 4 hours, the updates are, they just rushed her in for an emergency surgery. 1 hour later, still in surgery. And at this point, we had 3 children. And, you know, the amount of time to give birth to a child when the doctor is there is about 10 to 20 minutes, right? And so I knew this wasn't good. As the plane's descending, I get a message from my father-in-law that this was really the message that sort of changed my perspective forever, right? To your original question, which was something to the effect of, brace yourself. It doesn't look like she's going to make it. So I start sort of going through these stages of like grief and trauma, and I have every sort of thought that you could. My whole life kind of flashes before my eyes. I have all these memories of my childhood, when I got married to my wife, experiences that we had had, each kid being delivered. Like you just go through all these scenarios. And I started asking myself questions. What am I going to do? Am I ever going to love again? Was I a good father? Was I a good husband? What is life? Who is God? Is he real? Is that real? Like, I'm starting to question everything at this point. We land, I run through the airport, get in my Uber, I get to the hospital, I go up two floors. I walk in the room, and the first thing I noticed was the heart rate monitor was still going, right? And so I felt this extreme level of gratitude for just one more moment with my wife. One more moment to hold her hand, to feel her heartbeat, to feel her breath, these kind of things. I sit down at her bedside. I ask her father, who's in the room at this point, I said, "Hey, how's she doing?" And the moment that those words came out of my mouth, she had this intense, like seizure-like reaction. And we had to call doctors in and nurses, and it was super scary. And, you know, they end up getting her calmed down. And I asked him, I said, "Hey, has that happened before?" He said, "No, it was the only time." So, you know, that night, longest night of my life, I'm up the entire night. I'm staring at the heart rate monitor. I'm just expecting a flatline, right? And the doctors gave us almost no hope that she was going to make it. We get to the next day, she's still alive. One day turns into a second, to a third. And on the fourth day, she starts sort of coming to, right? She was in a state of comatosis for those first few days. And we start having a conversation. And at some point I said, "Hey, do you remember that seizure-like reaction that you had a couple of days ago? What was that all about?" And she said, "When I heard your voice, it gave me life." And, you know, that to me was probably the second moment. The text message was number one. The second moment was those words coming out of her mouth. I realized, like, dude, like, you know, you really are one. You really are a unit when you take somebody's hand in marriage. And I didn't consider myself a great husband, a loyal husband. I was all over the map with my marriage and some of my behavior and different things, right? And so, anyways, we fight through this. The silver lining is that she lives. It wasn't without a lot of medical and emotional complications and trauma that we had to go through together, and our kids even. But she ended up living, and you know, there's several stories or several lessons that you can take from that. But at the end of the day, the main one that I learned from this is all the stuff that I thought was a priority that I was chasing, which was the next coin, the next dollar, the next business opportunity, the next
accolade.
Name the thing, accolade.
Yeah.
It became pretty irrelevant to me in my life. And so the only thing to me that really mattered at that point, and even still today, was the depth and the meaning of the relationships with the people that I love the most. So that's my story about how I came to that conclusion.
So what, in that moment, coming to this whole new perspective of life, right? Like a whole new appreciation for the things that you say, "Hey, these are my priorities. I've had them messed up." Like, what changed after that? Did you say, "Okay, no more business. Like, I'm not going to go do any of this. I'm going to hunker down for a year or two and just spend time with my family." Like, what did the year before that look like? And then the year after that look like, because obviously you changed in that moment. So what was the polarity, the differences in the year prior to the year after? Obviously you said business, you know, messed up, made mistakes. Now, are you a completely new man just like that, just instantly in that moment? Or did you have to go through some more trials to become the individual that you are right now?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Yeah.
I mean, the year before that was, you know, leading up to it, let's say 2021 and before. And I'll always describe my life now as the 31 years pre-accident and then everything after. Because there was an immediate shift in the moment. Now, it still requires a lot of work. And even still today, obviously, I think we're all striving to become better, more capable men every day,
absolutely.
Right? Yeah. But like before that, it was incredibly selfish. right? So my time was my time, period, end of story.
And so what did a day look like when you say incredibly selfish?
The majority of my time was spent doing things that would make me more money or build the enterprise value of the company that I was building, right? So
was that late nights away from the family? Not even when you were in town, in the home, you just weren't present?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. All of it. Okay. Yeah, I mean, I still stayed, you know, like physical fitness, I think, was always my release or my constant through all of that. So I still was in the gym four, 5, 6 days a week, but it was like up at 5, straight to the gym, straight to the office, right? So morning time, never saw my kids, never saw my wife. In the office till 7 or 8, 9 p.m. every single night. Home, didn't see my kids go to sleep, kiss my wife goodnight, go to bed, rinse and repeat. I mean, that was a normal, day.
Yeah.
Saturdays, I worked the majority of Saturdays. Sundays, we've always considered family days. I kind of have a non-negotiable on working on Sundays. So that was our one family day, but that was also my one day to like recharge,
decompress.
So I would sleep on Sundays. Yeah. And for sure,
so it was still you,
still selfish, still
charging your battery.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
And yeah, 100%. I could be very much in the room, but not be present mentally. Because I always had a fire that I was dealing with, or an opportunity, or I'm thinking about a new strategy or somebody I'm going to hire. I mean, there's just, you take so much pressure as a CEO of a company that that's all I, you know, eat, slept and breathed for years.
Yeah. So what does a day look like now? You're not up at 5 a.m. at the gym anymore?
No, I mean, from time to time for sure, but I would say still typical is up early at the gym, home by 7, 7:30, breakfast with the kids, take the kids to school every day that I'm in town. You know, my work schedule is very light, very flexible, right? So I sit on a few boards, I have a podcast, I have a private equity fund, but I have really good partners in these businesses. And so any given week I could work 25 or 30 hours. But I'm very intentional with the rest of my available time, right? So my wife and I'll do lunch frequently. I'm usually, whatever work I'm doing, I'm usually checked out of work at 3, 4, 5 o'clock. So I'm in most cases picking up the kids from school. I'm spending time with them, spending time with my wife. And that feels right. That feels really good. And it's this idea of work-life balance is like a weird term that entrepreneurs like to shit on. And I think the reality is it is real. And I think we should all strive to find better balance between work and life. And, you know, I used to chalk it up as, well, it's really work-life harmony. It's the same thing. And I just don't believe that. I don't believe that anymore. I think that these are meant to be separate things. I think that when you're at work, you should be at work fully focused. I think when you're at home, you should be home fully focused. And I think these should be separate things, right? So this is a realization that I came to, and you know, it's always a work in progress, but I think there's habits and routines and even tactics that you can do on a daily basis to
remove distraction,
allow yourself to be a lot more present.
Yeah. You're saying, hey, we're always a work in progress. You know, I'm trying to get better. Within that just because you've changed and you have your priorities straight doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to be the happiest man on the planet 24/7. But I believe that you're probably found more peace honoring this new way of life than you did prior, right? Maybe your definition of happiness was a massive bank account or some form of success. So you were chasing that in hopes to fill that. But in reality, what you were chasing is peace. And that moment gave you an opportunity to change your perspective to say, okay, these are my priorities. And when your priorities are exactly how you say they are, if you say that your family is number one and your actions align with that priority, I think that you'll be at more peace with yourself than if you say that your family is a priority, but you're gone 300 days out of the year trying to build a business. You know, there's a lot of entrepreneurs that say, hey, I'm doing this for my family. I'm doing it for my family. In reality, you're doing it for you. You're just using your family as an excuse to get away with what you're doing and how you're living your life, right? Because if you're doing it for your family, but you're not ever around your family or present with your family, and that time comes and goes, and then you end up being rich later on in life, the only thing that you're going to want is to buy back the time with your family.
For sure.
Right. And so I think that a lot of people believe that there's a happiness that exists at the end of a certain number in a bank account or a certain level of success. Mm. And I just don't believe that it exists there. I think that you have to find and create a way of, for everybody, it's going to look a little bit different, right? For me, I get up and run 10 miles every single morning without headphones or anything like that. That's a meeting with my mind, which helps me be at ease with everything. You say, yeah, I journaled some things out. For me, I digest things in my life through running.
Yeah.
Right. And so as long as I have that time with me, everything else after that, I'm at peace with it. Right. And so I think that there's a big misconception of people saying that they want happiness. In reality, they really just want to be at peace with themselves. Mm,
okay.
Right.
I understand now.
Does that make sense?
Makes a lot of sense. Here's how I think about it. I think I tend to use a different word.
Okay. Right?
And this came from lots of, I would call it suffering in contemplation about life. Like really unsure what this was all for and really trying to understand why are we doing, why am I doing this? What is this life all about? And asking the question, what is the feeling that I'm trying to feel more of?
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you asked 100 people that, the answer would be happiness for most, right? I'm trying to be more happy.
Yeah.
Okay. So the way that I've, the conclusion that I've come to for me that works, and I think it's similar to what you're saying, just a different word, is fulfillment. And so I think about fulfillment to me, by definition, I think is intended to be vague. And so I think it's a word that is left up for interpretation. I think if you ask 10 people, what's the definition of fulfillment, they'll all give you a different answer, right?
Yeah.
Here's what it means to me. The way that I visualize fulfillment is I visualize our heart inside of our chest. And if that heart is fully filled, then therefore you've unlocked fulfillment, okay? And then I envision splitting that heart into sections like a pie, right? And there could be 3, there could be 4, there could be 5, or even 10. And it's up to the individual to decide what the sections of that pie are, okay? This could be things like a better financial standing. This could be happiness. This could be peace. This could be better physical well-being, physical fitness. It could be relationships. It could be spirituality, right? So there's these components of life, these key tenets of life that exist, and it's different for everybody. Some people aren't spiritual or don't want to be spiritual. It doesn't make them fulfilled. Or they don't care about physical fitness. It doesn't make them fulfilled. So you decide, and then you think about it this way. Is that heart ever going to be perfectly full? Is that ever going to be, are all of those ever going to be fully optimized? The answer is no. It's just impossible. You're not going to get all of them to 100%. But could you get all of them to 70 or 80 or 90%? And to me, that's the goal, is to be optimized across these disciplines or areas of our life that actually matter. Whereas pre-accident, for me, it was financially, I had nailed it. I was 99%. Yeah. But everything else, I was 20, 30, 50, 10, right?
Yeah.
And so that heart was maybe only 30% of the way full, even though I had unlocked financial wealth, right?
How do you find fulfillment now? Like where, when you're saying, you know, there's these sections, right? Like what are those sections for you? And outside of, I mean, obviously you prioritize your wife, you prioritize your kids, that has changed, but outside of immediate family, like where do your priorities lie in terms of contribution, I guess, right? Because I believe that there's not an individual ever that will find any form of fulfillment if they're only trying to contribute to themselves, right? Like, I think that we're put here to help other people in one way, shape, or another, right? And I think everybody has their own gifts in order to be able to serve somebody else, right? Whether it's somebody being a good listener or somebody being a good hype man or somebody, you know, whatever it is. So where do you find fulfillment in terms of your contribution to society at this point?
Yeah. So Q Levels, right? This project that I've been working on now for about a year with my partner, Eddie Panero, who's sitting in the room now. You're going to interview after this.
Yeah.
Levels is really a manifestation of exactly the thing that you're talking about, which is I'd finally gotten to a place in my life where I felt like, dude, I've made it. I am fulfilled. I really am. And on a daily basis, most days, I would say I wake up and I feel very fulfilled and I feel a lot of purpose in what I do. For me, I think it manifests itself through one of the things I say in there is I'm a doer, watch my feet, not my lips. And so I think the way that I set an example and I set a tone for men to want to be better, to strive to be more spiritual, more physically fit, have better relationships, more financially fit, if you will. That comes a lot through my example. And so it's by proximity of being around me, the rising tide raises all ships. And I think Eddie could attest to that being true, right? He and I have known each other a year. I'm not taking the credit for his growth, but if you asked him, where have you come in the last year since knowing and being around Tyler Moore? I think you'd be astonished with the progress that he's made in a relatively short amount of time. And I think that's true with anybody who I allow into my life and into my circle. So I think a lot of it's just is that, and that feels good, right?
Yeah.
Now I've built a platform where our podcast in any given month will have 3 to 5 million people listen to it.
Wow.
And that's big. That's impactful,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And we're having the reason why I think that's happened in such a short amount of time in about a year, just over a year, is, we talk about things that most people don't want to talk about. And it's some of the conversation you and I are having today,
yeah.
Which are hard things and rock bottoms and fighting through trauma and dealing with depression and having contemplating thoughts of suicide and losing a spouse and name the thing. And,
yeah.
And we're talking about it and we're exposing it to the world. And so I think, the world is in pain, specifically men are in pain. The suicide rate among men is higher than it's ever been in the history of the world right now in 2024. And it's getting worse every year. And so how do you stop that? Right. And that's my personal mission is to help slow that down.
I heard something one time that said depression is a luxury. I want to get your opinion on that. And the reason why that was said was because if you go to a third world country, you don't really hear about depression. Why? Because they wake up and they have a purpose. I've got to go hunt and go get food or work on my shelter or whatever it is, right? So it's the fact that we live in abundance, we have the ability to feel sorry for ourselves or be depressed. Mm. Do you believe that? Or what's your take on the reason why depression is hitting an all-time high? Because, I mean, statistics show it's just getting worse and worse and worse. But you go to these other countries that are kicking around a makeshift soccer ball and they seem to be happier than the kids are here that have everything that they could possibly need, right?
If you asked me this question pre-31,
yeah,
I'd give you a different answer, right? Because I used to be pretty cold when it came to these kind of conversations. Yeah. And my typical response
suck it up type
would be like, yeah, you're being a baby. Like, suck it up. Depression's not real.
Maybe not that nice about it.
Mental health's not real.
Yeah.
Right? Like, go to the gym.
Yeah. Move your body.
Yeah. You can get through these things.
But to say,
there is
still,
truth.
I believe that is the case. The first thing, if somebody's saying that they're dealing with mental health or depression,
yeah,
it's like, are you moving your body? Are you getting outside? Are you hanging around the right people? Like there are some things that you could still go down a checklist and say, hey, are you at least trying to do some of these things prior to maybe going
on medication for example?
Yeah, something else, right?
Totally. Listen, I totally agree. I also know the magnitude of the reality of how real some of that stuff can be for people, right?
Yeah.
So people that are clinically diagnosed with clinical depression, it's really sad. It's really sad to see because I've had friends who would have stood in that same camp 2 years ago that now have literally an imbalance in their brain. Something is now, the wiring in their brain is now off and they're fully depressed, right? And so I think there's a difference between clinical depression and I can't remember the other term, but it's like societal depression, right? Which
yeah.
is things that happen around me make me feel a certain way.
Okay.
I think that the leading cause is two things. I think number one is social media. I think social media, specifically for youth, but even for adults, you know, under the age of 55, social media has caused this. It's the mental health snowball that I think is happening is predominantly through social media. As much good as I think these kind of conversations can have for the world and good people out there preaching good messages can have, I think that's 1 or 2% of what's out there on the internet. Yeah. I think the majority of it is shit, and I think it's tearing people down.
Yeah.
So people, now how do you combat that? If you watch something and you feel jealousy or you feel any sort of way other than uplifted and happy, you should probably stop consuming that content. Mm. And if it's impossible for you to stop seeing this content because it's in your feed every day or people are sharing it with you, you should probably get rid of social media completely.
Yeah.
I think you'd be a lot happier. I think number two is specifically for men is that, you know, 93% of men in a survey recently, there was 10,000 men surveyed in the study. 93% of them said at their lowest point in life, they didn't feel like they had one other man that they could pick up the phone and call and tell. Right. So I think that I think some of this is driven because social media. I think COVID expedited some of these weird
isolation,
human connection things to where now most men don't feel like they have another man that they can turn to when they're in their darkest hour. Right. So I think helping foster community and foster relationships between good men is one way that you're going to slow that down. And the other is just, you know, people controlling what they put into their minds, which is predominantly social media.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. I read a book called The Brain by David Eagleman. And that's what made me realize all we are is, for the most part, a product of our environment. You are all of the experiences that you've ever had, all the information that you've ever digested into, you know, this individual that's sitting in front of me. And if you predetermine the individual that you want to become, you'll start fabricating or creating these environments that will start molding you more so into the person that you want to become.
Yeah.
Right? Like you're creating more of a life that aligns with the person that you want to be after that experience or after the accident, right? Like, and instead of going into this environment over here at the office, I'm going to be in this environment over here, right? Yeah. And I mean, it's just like if we went and got on a plane and moved to a country and we didn't speak their language and we immersed ourselves in that, we will eventually be speaking that language within, you know, 6 to 12 months pretty fluently. Yeah. Because we start becoming a product of that environment. So I'm a big, big believer in curating the information that goes into your mind or predetermining the time. So there was at one point, it was a couple of years ago, I said, I want to get closer to God. And I said, okay. And this was after reading the book, The Brain, right? And so I said, what's a good way to do that? So I purposely said, for the first 6 months of this year, the only thing I'm going to put into my mind is Christian music. When I'm driving in the truck, when I'm at the gym lifting weights, the only thing I'm going to listen to is Christian music, something that's uplifting spiritually to me. And it worked. I agree with you in terms of making sure that you protect what goes into your mind. I believe that you're better off being alone than being in a negative situation. Mm-hmm. So that then at that point you can say, okay, I'm going to build myself to an individual of value and then start attracting or purposefully finding the environments of other individuals that are of value so that then you can kind of lift each other up. And obviously that's why you guys, you know, came together and built what you have. Yeah. How long has that been around and kind of what's the premise of it in terms of, you know, I do phone calls with people. We link up, like what does that look like?
Yeah, that's a good question. So we've really spent a lot of time contemplating, you know, sort of how we launch this to the world. Right. So
it's not launched yet.
It's soft launched. So people know about the brand through the Sedona retreat. They know about the brand through Eddie and I wearing the brand, but the launch of the brand will be in conjunction with an event that's happening on the 25th of this month, which is one of the underpinnings of the brand is to do hard things. Like we think that one way to fight mental health and depression is to go out and do something hard.
In terms of doing hard things and if you overcome it, you're going to feel better about yourself.
Yeah, I think it's like, you know, are you familiar with the term misogi? which is a Japanese term that they...
I've heard it. I couldn't tell you what it means or anything like that.
So like in ancient Japan, what they had this ritual, this belief called Masogi, which was one time per year, so 365 days a year, one day they suffer, right? Yeah, so they do something incredibly challenging. And there's all sorts of different variations of this over time. And the whole idea is when you do something incredibly hard one day a year, it makes the other 364 days seemingly that much easier, right, to deal with, right? Mm-hmm. So I think here's the way that I think about it. Do you believe in Jesus? Are you a Jesus guy?
Yeah.
All right, so what did Jesus do when he performed the atonement, right? He suffered the sins of all. So he mm-hmm. went to rock bottom and then to the next rock bottom and the next all the way down to the very bottom.
Yeah.
Right? But he also had all the glory. And he was at the very top. So his spectrum of understanding
his range
is massive. And I think it's the same with us, right? So our ability to understand and have empathy towards people that are struggling and going through it
requires
upon how deep we've gone down and how high we've gone up, right? So if you have that spectrum, that range, then you can empathize with more men, right? So I think like, you know, once I understood that I had hit a couple of really, really low points, but I had also been at the summit.
Yeah.
Gave me the ability to really be relatable to a lot of people, right? So
is the idea that you create that event for these and say, hey, we're gonna curate suffering and a little bit of misery for you.
Yeah.
So right before I turned 37, it was 39 days before I turned 37, I was going through a low point. And I was like, what's something I've never done before that I would never want to do? And I hate running. There's not too many people who are like, hey, I absolutely love it. Even people that do it often don't like it, but they do it for the reason of just kind of the mental discipline to get on the other side of it, the feeling that they get when it's complete, not necessarily during, right? And I go to the running store and I said, how far do I have to run to be able to do the 37? I said, I've got 39 days to train. I've got to go 37 miles. And he said, well, it's not about how far you can run. It's about time on your feet. Yeah. He's like, you just need to go like get a lot of time on your feet. Like you don't, some people say, hey, if you can run 13 miles, you can run a marathon.
Yeah.
Right. So that they'll put it in a number. And this guy's like, you're going to be on your feet longer than your body's ever been on its feet straight. So go walk for like 5 hours or 6 hours. And I'm like, yeah, that's easy. That's nothing. So I put a, you know, weighted vest on. I'm like, okay, anybody can walk for, you know, 4 or 5 hours. No big deal. But the breakdown that happens in your legs and your lower back and like on 3 hours, 3.5 hours, 4 hours, it's brutal. Yeah. Like it's nothing that you would ever be able to predict unless you've actually gone through it.
Yeah.
And when I first started walking, I was like, okay, this is going to be nothing. Yeah. I can do it for days. That's what it feels like until just step by step by step. And then, you know, 4 hours and 15 minutes into it. Now that I've run as much as I've ran, 4 hours and 15 minutes just walking with a 20-pound weight vest, that simulates the same distance as running, you know, 25 miles, right? And so what would you say are the top three ingredients in your opinion to live a whole, fulfilled life, right? Yeah. Like it seems like you're hitting a stride, right? You feel as though that, you know, hey, I was this way, now I'm this way. And it seems like just being around you, you're at peace or you're fulfilled.
Yeah.
Like what would you say the top three things are for somebody else to find that sort of peace or fulfillment for themselves?
I'd say number one is your relationships being in good standing.
Okay. Right?
So there's a couple of concepts here that I like to talk about. Okay. One of them is what I call circle management. Okay. So it's the idea that who do you let into the circle?
Yeah.
Who gets to stay in the circle and who needs to go? And being thoughtful about who you let in, right? I think this is really important. I think too many people, they hang on to old past relationships just for the sake of history. Like, well, they were my friend in elementary or high school or so, therefore I have to be their friend forever.
They call it loyalty outweighing logic.
Sometimes that loyalty, that sort of dumb loyalty ends up breaking you down.
Yeah.
And it does you a disservice. So I think really tightly managing your inner circle. The other one for relationships that's a hack. There's two things. Okay. Number one, check in on your people just to check in. This is something that I do with all the people that I care a lot about. And it's almost like shocking to them when I call and I say, "Hey man, how you doing?" And they're like,
"What do you need?
What do you need?" And it's like, "Nothing. I just wanted to check in."
Yeah.
The first time it's like a shock, but now these people know that when I call, for the most part, it's just to check in and make sure they're doing okay. And by the way, probably half the time they're not doing okay. Like, they're like, "Oh, you know, I'm struggling with something. I could use a little advice." Or, "Hey, here's what I'm going through. I'd love you to just like listen." Right. So that's number two. And then number three that goes hand in hand with that is just in your relationship, show up and try to add value, right? Don't show up trying to suck the life and the energy and the value out of your relationships. If you show up always with a mindset of like, "How can I deliver more value to this person's life?" then it will come back tenfold all the time, 100%. So I'd say number one is relationships. I would say number two is spirituality for me right now. So I was born and raised in the LDS church, which I don't know. Are you LDS by chance?
I was raised LDS. You're raised LDS? Go to church.
But, okay. Yeah. So born and raised in the LDS church, which is a pretty, it's maybe the most demanding religion in the world. And
what do you mean by that?
You're required to do a lot to maintain your standing in the church, right? So there's a give and take, right? If you want to have all the privileges in the church, like being able to go to the temple, holding what we call the priesthood, then you're asked to do a lot in order to maintain that.
You believe that's a good thing?
I don't. I think it's a good thing to an extent, but I think I think over demanding tends to hijack your life when it comes to callings, when it comes to tithing, when it comes to all these things.
Yeah, I agree.
So I think overly demanding, also just I did a lot of reading when I was going through this period of my life and just came to the conclusion that, you know, some of the truth claims were not exactly what I thought they were as a kid growing up, right? So because I had what we would call in the LDS church a faith crisis, right? It took me down this path of like really just trying to understand like, what do I want to do next?
Yeah.
Like, do I believe in God? Do I believe that Jesus is who he says he is? Do I want to keep going to a church?
Which like, I believe are all healthy questions.
Yeah.
Right. And sometimes you're judged
if you investigate that.
If you ask questions like that.
Yeah.
But if anything, when you find the answers to those questions, it leads you to more of a fulfilled life, right? Like at least you found the answers for yourself rather than saying, "Hey, somebody coming to you and say, hey, these are the answers. Just believe them."
Yeah.
Right.
So I think I've come a long way in that journey. I'm currently reading a work by a guy named Lee Strobel called The Case for Christ. It's essentially like one of the leading, leading sort of atheist that was disproving that Jesus Christ is not real. And went and talked to all the experts around archaeological evidence and fingerprint evidence and eyewitness evidence and 12 different types of evidence, all the experts in the world, and was converted to Christianity through this journey
through of investigating. Trying to prove otherwise.
Trying to prove that it was false, right? So I'm reading that work right now. So this is really filling my cup, this like spiritual journey that I'm on. I'm investigating different churches. I still, by the way, go to the LDS church with my wife. She prefers to go there. So I'm doing double time.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So spend a lot of time. The majority of the music I listen to now is like spiritual Christian based music. So I'd say that's number two. And I would say number three is physical fitness for me. Because I think physical fitness foundationally is arguably the most important foundation that you can have to unlock the rest of it.
Yeah. Okay,
I think physical fitness leads to good mental health,
mm-hmm.
which leads to good mindset.
Yes.
Which leads to all of it. Right. So, so that one's important for me. So those are my three key tenets right now that I'm focused on.
Relationships,
spirituality, Physical fitness.
Physical fitness. Yeah. And I would, I like those three. I really do. I like that you tied a bow on it with physical fitness. You know, I think a lot of people are out there searching for their purpose. What's my purpose? What's my purpose?
Yeah.
You know, and if I just knew what my purpose was, I would chase that and I would do anything that I possibly could to honor that purpose. Yeah. I think people want to live in their purpose. They are just confused about what it is.
Yeah.
Right. And I always tell people, I'm like, this lower version of you is never going to find your higher calling. You have to be in pursuit of the best version of yourself, and in pursuit of the best version of, in other words, taking your physical fitness seriously in that pursuit and just honoring the things that you should honor, being a good person. I believe as long as you're on that path, your purpose will expose itself. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't necessarily need to go find it. It'll find you as long as you're honoring yourself, honoring your body, and living life in a proper way, right? And so I think that people are willing to live in a proper way as long as they find their purpose first, when it's usually opposite, yeah. Right? Everybody wants money, but they don't want to do the work. Everyone wants the body, but they don't want to go to the gym. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, we got to go to the gym to have the body, or we got to go to work to have the money, right? We have to be in the process of finding or extracting the best version of ourselves in order to find out what our purpose is,
yeah.
Right? And I believe that, you know, those three things, those three core things that you just talked about are a great way to find fulfillment as well. So, bro, how do people find you and connect with you in terms of your podcast, in terms of your social media?
Yeah, Tyler.Hall. So yeah. If you just search Tyler Hall on...
Is that the name of the podcast as well?
It's the Roller Coaster Podcast, but it all funnels through my personal page.
It all funnels through?
Yeah.
Dude, I appreciate you coming through today and sharing your wisdom and some of the struggles and pain that you had to go through to become the man that you are today. It was awesome.
I appreciate you having me.
Yeah. Guys, hope you enjoyed today's episode. Make sure that you share the show with somebody that you love and care about. Other than that, keep kicking ass. We'll see you guys next week.